The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Saratoga. I'm your host, Rick Thompson, and it is Saturday of the 4th of July weekend celebration, and I hope everybody's got something planned for our nation's birthday. Before I introduce Tony, I read a disturbing interview on Fox this morning on my telephone. They had gone to New York and Washington and were taking samples, asking people, are you proud to be an American? And believe it or not, some idiots said that, they were happy to be American, but they don't like what's going on now. And, you got it from all ranges. A fellow that's a Navy veteran said the freedoms that we share and we all have, and it's probably one of the greatest countries in the world. And another young man said we're given opportunities at birth that other people in other countries aren't given. It's a luxury to be here. A lady from Kansas said sometimes proud to be an American, but lately not so much. And in a way, I can understand that, but never not be proud to be an American. And then there was some crackpot, Liam from San Francisco, and you kind of expect San Francisco people to say something like this, but he said, I don't love America because of our history of genocide and slavery. And if I was the person asking the question, I would have said, Liam, get over it. It's been over 100 and probably 150 years that slavery has been abolished, and so you got to get over it and get a life. I look at 4th of July weekend, and, I think back to what the Founding Fathers did and the amazing people that they were to have the foresight to put together our Constitution so that every day we can wake up and be free, do the things we want, chase an American dream, and the shape that we're in today that Tony and I were talking about just for about 30 seconds before, and I don't want to bring politics into anything today, but we have rights that no other country in the world has. We can do whatever we want, go wherever we want, and, things are tough now, just the way the things happened 2 years ago, and, we're running into a lot of problems now, but people's work ethics are at an all-time low, and I don't know if using it as the pandemic is the problem, but it goes way beyond that. I think there's a certain percentage of people that just were looking for something so that they could use the excuse that they are today as, oh, we can't work. But always be proud to be an American, and if you really aren't proud to be an American, well, then go live in a foreign country and see what it's like over there and stay there and enjoy the life you can have over there. And then maybe come back in about 5 or 6 years and then have that question asked to you. So enjoy the 4th of July weekend, just like Memorial Day, Veterans Day. Remember what the day is about. And they're positive days, and we should all be happy that we have a chance to celebrate days like this. Okay, I'm done. Done with my soapbox. I want to introduce, he's a good friend of mine, and I met him at the racetrack when I started doing security up there, but over the years we've become pretty good friends. So I want to introduce Tony Podlaski, who's affectionately known, as I said earlier in the music show, as Ski. And good morning, Ski.
Good morning, Rick.
How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, speaking of disturbing things, I was listening to the intro of the show, and they had introduced you as Rick Thompson and the Saratoga All-Stars. I'm saying to myself, yeah, what qualifies me as an All-Star right now?
You are an All-Star.
At best, I could be batting 150, and, basically I'd have, three appearances at the plate and probably strike out two times and maybe hit a weak grounder and then maybe get another hit, maybe, another 10 at-bats later. Yeah, I don't know about the All-Star thing here.
You're an All-Star because I'll tell you what, if you're up 100 times and you get 33 hits, you're batting 333, and that is a high average in Major League Baseball. So that just goes to show you, persevere. Yeah. Even one out of three times, you're still an All-Star.
Now I'll take that under consideration here. Interesting because I think I wore the wrong colors coming into. So I'm now around the Skidmore campus, realizing I'm not wearing the appropriate colors here. I'm wearing actually a rivals team's colors.
That's right, Union.
With the rival hat on as well. So it's like I'm probably not setting up myself good for a show here today.
Well, I'm wearing a reddish hat too, yeah. And I'm not wearing my green Skidmore hat that I adopted a. A Chinese student here on Skidmore, kidding around. We transported some girls from the campus here to the horse barn down the street, the bus company I work for. And I got to be close with four of the students I transported, and one of them is a Chinese girl here from Beijing that's going to school. And I took her to the Yankee game back on the 5th of June. We went down with Pat Pepino's bus. They had 250 people that went down. And she knew nothing about sports and that. But she called me her adopted father because I had four heart attacks down at Yankee Stadium because I lost sight of her. And you don't like to do that in a crowd down in New York City. But she gave me a Skidmore, a greenish, I call them faded hats. I love the faded color hats, Skidmore hat. So because she missed Father's Day. I had lunch with her. She's leaving for Boston for 6 weeks. Taking some course out there. But in any case, it's good to have rivals. You know, especially when you're friendly rivals.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one thing I've learned about, especially with both my daughters in college sports. The rival, especially when we look at the Liberty League itself, and it doesn't matter if it's a Skidmore Union or RPI Clarkson or RIT and University of Rochester. I mean, they're friendly rivals, and it's just great to watch, that high-level competition at the same time.
Well,
it's amazing. It really is. And I'm just glad to, be able to watch that over. I'm just kind of thinking my time frame right now, at least over 6 years. Both daughters playing.
It's amazing. And I want to talk about your school career as far as teaching and that. And I forgot to mention, it was in all the advertisements and that. Tony's the assistant professor of English at Hudson Valley Community College, and he's also the press box coordinator and media liaison at New York City Racing or New York Racing Association, which is NYRA. And I do want to do a shout out to Nakina Norris, who is one of my other young friends from Skidmore, who's up in Maine, and they all take riding lessons, so the affinity for horses is high. Tony, we're going to talk a little bit about your teaching career, because in such a short amount of time, I know you've been teaching for a while, but you're still a pretty young guy.
I'm flattered to hear that, knowing that now over the of a certain century, or not century, but decade phase of in the 50s now. But I'll take that as
that's
a,
okay. You're a young guy, and you got a long way to go. Yeah. But what you've done in your life is accomplishment in both careers, the NYRA and college simultaneously, because you were doing online courses while you were press box coordinator up there. And I don't know how you did it, but... talk a little bit about your college career, because you've won a lot of accolades, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, first, you know, kind of as you set me up here with, you know, with both positions, I would consider myself, you know, fortunate, blessed, however you want to call it. I mean, just, I just feel at least very fortunate to be in this position to have a career where I can at least have a dual career where I can manage it and enjoy it and appreciate it, you know, at the same time, you know, in regards to my teaching career. This wasn't my this wasn't my primary career. Teaching was never in my my forte, or at least never under consideration.
Really?
I go back to, again, you want to look back at my, you know, educational background, right out of, I went into the workforce briefly before I went to college. I actually worked for one of the supermarkets, as third shift of the night crew. And after about a year or so, kind of watching some of the older employees, you know, working at third shift and watching their bodies just getting beat up night in, night out. And, I mean, these were basically, you know, men in their probably, maybe late 20s. And, I remember one of them was going into the hospital just to get a disc repaired because of just the amount of just bending over and picking up cases and just putting them on the shelves. And I just realized that, you know, I said to myself, yeah, maybe this is not for me. So kind of, you know, pick up the pace of the narrative here a little bit. Actually started at Hudson Valley and then got my gen ed classes out of the way and then transferred to Morrisville. But when I went to Morrisville, it's part of a journalism program, and I had really, four awesome professors there. And one of the things I had done, while I was there was started tutoring, my fellow classmates, especially when it came to midterm tests, and some were at-risk students that just needed more support. So I worked with them through not only just, helping them with their study skills, but also sort of writing skills as well. And I remember the department chair at the time and another professor approached me and said, they watched what I was doing, and they said, have you ever thought considering teaching? Well, I'm 20 years old at that point, and I didn't want to, teaching was never under consideration. I mentioned a moment ago, I wanted to be in sports media. That's what I really wanted to do. I wanted to be a sports editor, sports columnist, whatever it may be, or work on a sports desk, which I ended up doing for about, definitely for about 15 years. And then what happened is I started seeing the industry change with the emergence of the internet, and I was starting to see jobs starting to, basically being, I would say just let go, or, people would retire and they would never be replaced, or just people would be let go just in general. And I said to myself, geez, I said, maybe I should go back and consider teaching. So I ended up going back for my master's, started, teaching part-time, and just kind of worked on my skill set of just more so the delivery of materials, because at that point I had the knowledge to teach college writing. It was more so, could I deliver it for students, just like I had done, almost that point 20 years ago at that stage. So pretty much was hired full-time in, I think, 2008, and since then I've been, pretty much a full-time professor at that point. But the thing about teaching, the most rewarding part is the end of the year in with graduation is what it really comes down to. Just watching students that I had over a year or 2 years, sometimes with certain programs, just watching them mature, not only just, as individuals, but, and as writers, but just even, as college students, and going out either into the real world to work somewhere or, to transfer to another school.
Yeah. I want you to continue this, but, I consider myself, as Lou Gehrig said, one of the most luckiest guys in the world. I'm very lucky in what I've done in my life. I mean, I've, met a lot of nice people, and, the job I have at NYRA is probably the best job I could ever have had, meeting so many people. And lucky enough to be at the press box stairs and getting to talk to all the guys and gals up in the press box day after day. But you said the highlight of your teaching career is at graduation. Mm-hmm. And I work for an independent bus company and transport kids to special needs schools. And I've had the same run for like 7 or 8 years. And the saddest day for me is the last day of the school year, because you miss the kids. And they, I like NYRA's position, but I don't know if I could ever have been a teacher, because that is like the most depressing period for me of the last day of school, not seeing the teachers. And it's probably more difficult being in the classroom every day. But, I'm glad to hear you say that you have a sense of pride and accomplishment, because I see it firsthand, and family-wise, you are a great mentor. You're a great person that a young person can go to for advice. You did it with my nephew, and I know I've introduced you to a lot of the young people that have been interns and that come back every year. I always get to see them, always get a hug from them. But you've always talk to them about a career path that they may not even have thought about how to apply themselves. And that not everybody has that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I don't know if it's a philosophy or value system I have, whatever it may be, but I kind of look at things in a couple of perspectives here. One, I look at my students as if they're my own children. Yes. And that's because to me, I don't want to say it's like a parental approach to teaching, but it is to some degree, because a lot of students sometimes don't have an outlet or a person they can reach out to at least share their experiences or even share even confidential information that that just need guidance and some suggestions on where to go for additional help. So I think in the classroom, I look at basically all my students as if they were my own children. Just, you know, my goal here is to kind of cultivate them, in this case here, with their writing or communication skill set, you know, not only just writing, but also the verbal communication skill set as well. So that's one area. The other area is that I look at every year that the students coming in are the next generation that are going to be eventually taking care of me. So whether it's nursing, whether it's business, whether it's engineering, these are the next, you know, leaders coming up, because the reality is I'm not going to be in this position forever. It's right. Eventually someone's going to have to, basically lead the way to, help, the older generations at that point. I'll give you a good example, kind of bring a personal example. Thursday, my wife and I got tickets to go down to the New York Red Bulls game, for a soccer game. They were playing Atlanta United. It's the first time I've ever been to anything like this. And we're getting to find a bottle of water, realized that no one was taking cash at that stage. So it was like, okay, cashless pay. I didn't bring my wallet in or anything. So the only thing I had was, my wife Linda and I had our cell phones, but she didn't have Apple Pay set up. So, she called my older daughter Megan and said, "Hey, how do you set up Apple Pay?" And realizing that, that's one of those examples, or at least a moment, where there's a younger generation that has more knowledge and technology than I do that, is going to end up, helping, the older generation.
Sure.
So that's, that's one of the, that's a personal example, but kind of carrying that into the classroom. I'm just trying to work with the next generation of leaders. Again, it could be business, politics, health field, health sciences, it's just getting them ready to be the next leaders.
Well, and your position as a professor is, I think, one of the most important things is communication, English communication. You need that as a foundation to do anything. Funny, when you said we went to Yankee game, as I said, in June. And, of course, no cash. Yep. So, but they do have machines that you can put cash in and get a Visa card. I said, "Boy, you buy a hot dog or whatever, and you always leave a tip for the girl." And I said, "Geez, I don't know. Can I put a $2 tip on the card?" And she goes, "No." She goes, "But we take cash." So that's where I used my cash was on tips, but. Yeah, we've gotten to the point where beer here, hot dog, and then they have on their wrist, they have a little thing that they can slide the card and you pay for it. But no, communications is, I think, the basic. I know they say, reading, writing, and arithmetic, but in there is English and communication. It's the most.
Yeah, I mean, definitely in college, because like with most colleges, they do have to meet a standard, or at least show some sense of a competency. And in this case here, we'll just use my background with communication skill set. They got to show that they have the ability to not only write effectively, but also speak effectively as well. And that's all part of the SUNY general education requirements. And then there's also a liberal arts component that they're supposed to take a certain amount of classes to meet, I believe, 30 credits at that point. But just kind of getting back to where I'm going, it's like, yeah, I'm part of that, you know, track that they have to complete. You know, it's part of maybe a comp one, comp two, and also too some of the other writing courses that I teach as well that does, you know, need to meet some sense of a standard for communication requirement.
Now, I know your wife's a teacher,
mm-hmm.
and I look at how you brought your daughters up. I mean, when I met you, they were still in high school, very involved in sports. I think you were a good parent and a good mentor that they both went to college. Well, talk a little bit about that, because they juggled a very great sports career in college, and also their field is amazing.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with high school. I think late middle school, 7th to 8th grade, and going to high school, I think is really where it starts. It's about pretty much time management. So if they learn how to, one of the things that my wife and I had done, especially early on, even when they were elementary school, that the first thing they did when they came home was get the homework done out of the way. Just get it out of the way, get it done, and that they could be able to get other things done, after that. So by the time they were done with their homework, a lot of times it was only done, you know, about an hour. Then we could go to practice or we can go out and do things at that stage. And I think it was just working with that time management skill set that was brought in not only through high school, but then it just got carried over to college. So they knew basically, okay, I've got a lab that's due, you know, this time, and I've got an assignment due this time, all right, and then I've got a meet or an event or game, you know, on this day or whatever. And that's all they've learned is just kind of, you know, work with time management. I think that's the big one. It's just managing the time to get everything done. And, you know, if it becomes overwhelming, you just kind of figure out, okay, what needs to be taken out of the equation to make everything work in the end. I think the interesting part, actually, it's the last time I probably will ever read my older daughter's paper. She had written a paper for a graduate course at RPI. She's working on her, you know, finishing out her doctorate at this point. I was like, Dad, can you read this? Make sure everything's all right. And it's like, and I felt honored because, like, here she's on a, you know, basically a dissertation away of completing a PhD and still asking me to read. And this is more of a grad class. It wasn't a journal article by any means, but I felt honored, or at least I, you know, felt very fortunate to still, that she still came to me and said, hey, can you take a look at my work one last time before, you know, I submit it. And it was a 14 page paper on accessibility in the power grid. I do remember that part. The content-wise, I kind of got lost in it, but I kind of worked with my mindset. It's like, all right, I had to think as a writing teacher, does it, you know, sentences follow simple? You know, does it have a subject, of, you know, a verb and a direct object approach to that? You know, so everything, you know, did it follow logically from there? And did it follow logically from paragraph to paragraph? But as for the content, it's like, it didn't. It made some of it made sense to me because I did understand the concept of accessibility and the impact of the power grid. But when she was talking, you know, the accessibility, I understood really well. It was the power grid where she was working a lot of technical terms. Like, okay, I got to really look at this a little bit closer here. But, you know, 14 pages, I kind of like, wow, it's a lot of pages. It was even a lot more when I realized it was single spaced. You know,
So
double spacing makes it probably about 28 to 30 pages, which, you know, is a typical graduate paper at that point.
Yeah. I'd get through about a half a page, and that would be it. But, well, I mean, it just goes to show, not only are you two great parents, but you're great teachers. And because both girls are engineers, correct?
Yeah, so my older one, she's, as I said, finishing up on her doctorate, or at least her dissertation is going to be in this, September in electrical engineering at RPI. My younger one just, you know, graduated from Union with mechanical engineering, and she's going to be working at Bechtel Plant Machinery, which is really right around the corner from Union College. And the plan is to go to Clarkson because Clarkson School is right next door. So Clarkson ended up taking over Union's graduate program for engineering a few years ago. So now Clarkson has established a satellite school so that those in the Capital Region can work on their master's, you know, again, in any of the STEM fields. Usually it's mechanical and electrical engineering.
You know, you alluded to how the kids today know so much more about, you know, technology and stuff. That as you get older, you kind of lose, you get farther and farther away from it. And there was a thing on Facebook that says, don't get mad at me when I ask you to help me out with my cell phone, because remember, I taught you how to use a spoon. And I find myself too, you know, I used to be able to hook up a stereo, work on the TV with the components and that, and now I'm asking my daughters to come over and, hey, can you help me out with my cell phone here or something on the computer, you know? And it's just, it's great to see them have that knowledge, and
It is fascinating. You mentioned that as a good example, because if someone had approached me and said, hey, can you set up an online course and work with all these web-based products and tools and, you know, things that we need to teach in online course, you know, video, you know, everything, or just work with software as part of teaching, I would have no problem with it. It actually comes easy to me. But when it comes to, as I'm holding up my smartphone right now, to just work with some feature on it, I need, you know, help on that part. It's bizarre, because I said, you know, there's parts of technology I'm really good with, especially when it comes to teaching, maybe even computer applications. But with a basic cell phone, it's like, yeah, it's just, you know.
I know. It's amazing.
I can just text. I can, you know, send emails out and make phone calls and, you know, use it for social media once in a while. But when we start getting into some of the other, you know, other applications, I do need some guidance along the way sometimes.
We have two engineers now, so you'll be okay.
Yeah, one electrical, the other one mechanical at that point. But, yeah, it's, as I said, it's been a pretty good, you know, it's been a really good experience. And as I said, just like I said earlier, been very fortunate, very blessed to be in this position. I never take it for granted by any means.
No. You know, I want to talk about time management a little bit, because, you know, we talked a little earlier about the amount of things that you do so well. And in your college position as a professor, you've been involved in a lot of different steps of college.
Yeah.
And you also juggled your children's sports careers. You were at every game, all the away games, and you still had time to do NYRA, which I'll tell you, that is a beast in itself, that position. But talk about some of the positions you've held at the college level.
Yeah. I mean, beyond teaching, I could just go in and teach every day. That's basically what I've been hired to do, is just go in and teach, you know, my courses, and, you know, and I can be done for the day. But part of, you know, especially if we're looking for promotion or if we're looking to get further ahead, we get involved in committee work that would, you know, could be ranging in small, you know, small committee to something a little bit more larger on a, you know, at a college scale. So, for example, I'm currently working with the college as part of a self-study, a middle state self-study. So I'm part of, you know, really oversee one area of the student experience in regards to their learning. And, you know, I'm got to work with it's probably going to be somewhere between 15 and 20 page section of a report that ends up becoming part of like a 100 plus page report that will, you know, determine our college's accreditation. So that's like one of the things I would end up doing, you know, because, well, yeah, you got to hire me as a writer, you know, at least take me as a writer at this point, because, you know, they want somebody with a strong writing skill set to be able to work with the evidence and the documentation and the explanation of, you know, at least of the student learning experience at that point. Yeah, there's other committees. I mean, chair of the Chancellor's Award Committee. I mean, that's a, you know, I think that's a, you know, important committee to serve. But yeah, I mean, I've just been a lot. I've been on for plus I'm the on actually two other positions I should probably mention as well. I'm on the executive board for our faculty union, and also too on the foundation's board as a representative director.
And you also won a couple awards.
Yeah, I mean, I did, you know, receive the SUNY Chancellor's Award about, now it's going on about 4 years ago. And, you know, when I was nominated, I just, you know, never thought about it. You know, like, and I asked myself, okay, what makes me special in this area? And realizing when I started putting everything together, I was like, wow, I have done a lot. And, you know, it's part of, you know, of being there, you know, at this stage. And so, you know, by the time I got to May, when they had the honors awards night, I mean, it was a little bit overwhelming, because, you know, I'm on the stage, I got to give a speech, and I'm saying to myself, what makes me special or what makes me more unique than any of my, you know, fellow faculty that work just as hard every day to, you know, do in the classroom. Yeah, and there's a couple of fellowship awards that I've received as well as part of, you know, working with, you know, teaching and part of being of a program as well. So, yeah, I mean, there's just, you know, definitely, you know, earned a lot over the years.
Yep. I just want to put in here that you're listening to WSPN 91.1 FM Skidmore Radio. And if you want to give a call into the studio, 518-580-5783, 580-5783. And if you missed part of the show, you can always listen to it on YouTube under Talk Saratoga, and then just look up the show, or on SaratogaBroadcasting.com on the internet station on my podcast page there. And I do want to say one thing that we're getting information out of Tony here, and he's a terrific guy. I mean, I look up to him so much on how he handles things, but he's not a person that goes around tooting his own horn. So the man is amazing, and so we're getting information out of him today that, you know, I want to, not because he wants to brag about himself.
Yeah, I'm not one that likes to at least to go in that, you know, that area itself. But as I said, if it, you know, one of the things I've learned, especially now that I'm in my 50s, but something I even learned probably, you know, a few years ago, that we're only really on this planet at once. And, you know, I want to take advantage of every, at least the experience itself, doing as much as possible is part of being here, part of that, or at least that existence, so to speak. Because, as we said, we only have one chance to do this, right. And we want to make the best. I mean, I want to make the best of it as much as possible. I don't want to live through life. I've never thought about living through life just, you know, just getting by or just kind of being complacent. It's just I want to get something accomplished.
Well, you want to leave a footprint, yeah. And you want. I had said earlier, I'm very fortunate. I've met a lot of people that have, and some of them have become good friends. And you want to leave a footprint on how you affect other people, yeah. And what other people mean to you. And you want it to be positive. And, you know, you have to leave something behind, become involved, even in community.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not a teacher or whatever, get involved in your community any way you can. Help out. I mean, that you're creating a legacy for other people, too, to show them what they can do. A little bit more about the adventures of ski and what you've learned from it.
Yeah, it's the adventures have been quite a lot over the last couple of weeks. As I said, I think, I go back to at least Hudson Valley graduation, which was like the middle of May. I think it was maybe the second Saturday of May. And one of the things, I got a text from Pat McKenna, Director of Communications for NIRA, and he sent me a picture of the Belmont credential with my, you know, with my photo on it. And the question was, are you in? And it kind of, my heart sank because I said to myself, oh, I just realized that the Belmont stakes was that graduating, you know, at least Union's graduating weekend. So I kind of said back, called him and said, hey, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it. You know, and he understood initially. And then I thought about it and thought about it. And it's like, let me talk to my family about it. So I talked to Lindsay. I said, hey, you know, this is what's going on. They need the help. And, you know, I said, you know, what's happening in graduation week at Union? So she has mentioned that. Said, Dad, the big thing I just need you is for the senior awards day, which was that Friday. And then obviously graduation that Sunday morning. It's like Saturday, you know, you don't have to do much of anything, because typically what they end up doing for that last week, and obviously for senior week, it's a big thing for any college, you know, student at that point. But for that, you know, that break between the Friday and the Saturday, it's really just to get the students, you know, their house, you know, to get all the stuff out of their house at that point, so they can, you know, clear everything out, because they have to be out by 6 o'clock that Sunday night or that Sunday evening. So at that point, Lindsay had most of her stuff home at that point, so we didn't really have to do much that next day, or at least that Sunday. So it's like, yeah, I'll go down to Belmont. But it was probably one of the long, you know, long weekends, because it went from the Senior Awards to driving down to New York, and then, you know, that day, and then that, you know, Belmont Stakes, and then I left that night. I don't think I got home until like 12:30, and then got to bed probably like 1:30, slept for like maybe 4 hours, and then next thing you know, it's like, okay, here's graduation day, because, you know, graduation, yes, it starts at 10 o'clock, but typically you have to be there probably around 8:30, sure, just to get a seat and everything at that stage.
Well, I left 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
And we got down there and did the job all day. You know, I was fortunate. My lieutenant, Tommy, he had me working with him, and we were scanning the people coming off of the subway train. And I was at the top of the stretch. I never saw a horse go by. Never. I mean, that's... But, and we got home about 11:30, and it's a long day.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was that Sunday before,
yep,
that I went to the Yankee game, so I had two of the charter, and charter buses aren't fun to drive on. I don't care how comfortable they say they are, back and forth. But it was a fun time down there.
Yeah, to me, the Belmont is pretty much the prelude to Saratoga. It really is, because there are horses who train up here, because keep in mind that the training track opens typically around mid-April, maybe the end of April, depending on the weather. And at that stage, about a month before the Belmont, you have horses already training. Some are training even at, if it's not for the Belmont, it is for some of the races leading up to, or at least as part of the undercard of the Belmont. So at that point, you've got maybe you got some horses that are up here, training, then they go downstate for the race or the undercard itself. But from the mid to end of April, right up through obviously in a couple of weeks here when Saratoga starts, actually about 9 days from now. I mean, it is the prelude. It is basically the stage before it's being set here for the meet.
And we're lucky that two Skidmore grads, who are, I think, the majority owners of Moldonigal.
They are part owners.
Yeah. Because I know Sagatoga.
Yeah, Sagatoga Stable. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of local partnerships, or those who may have a local connection to a bigger stable itself. I mean, it's good to see those stories like that.
So you think Mo's going to be up in Saratoga?
Well, I was reading this morning coming in that... that maybe the horse is going to be trained right up to the Travers at that point. I really like Mo Dongal in the Derby, especially for what he did in the Wood Memorial. He had one of the faster final quarter mile times in any of the spring class, or at least the spring prep races to the Derby itself. And he actually came off the pace. He came out from the back or off the pace in a quick pace to win the Wood Memorial by pretty much by a narrow margin. But I think it's pretty impressive for a horse to close on a quick pace to do something like that. And I thought that was, to me, I thought that was a really good sign for him going to the Derby. Unfortunately, the Derby, the horse just didn't get a good break from the gate, and just had a hard trip all around. And the horse still finished fifth at that point. So I thought coming into Belmont, he was really probably the best horse in the race. And coincidentally, Todd Pletcher goes 1-2 with Mo Dongal and Nest. Nest was back in training yesterday. She had a workout, so I'm thinking that she's going to be up here as well. I really think it's going to be a really great racing season up there. You're going to have a lot of nice horses that are going to be up there. I mean, you kind of look at even this weekend with some of the stake races. I mean, like today, you've got Life Is Good, and coming back since running at Dubai against Speaker's Corner, who really had some good sprint races down in Florida earlier this year. So you got that matchup, and then out in Churchill Downs today, you've got Mandaloon Olympiad, who's actually Olympiad had been training up here for the last couple of weeks. You know, so Bill Mott, you know, ended up shipping Olympiad out for the Stephen Foster. And then you got American Revolution, also trained by Todd Pletcher, who's New York bred, who really had a good, you know, strong finish here, at least at the end of the year, winning the Met Mile, or not the Met Mile, the Cigar Mile, you know, I should say, correction on that. And then, you know, didn't have, you know, kind of needed maybe the first race coming back, but he's probably going to, you know, move forward and maybe also be at Saratoga. I just think you're going to see a lot of good horses, racing up here. And that's what Saratoga is all about. It's just seeing these really good horses coming up here to, you know, to compete and, you know, to, you know, provide a show for everyone.
Well, they love, I mean, let's face it, a lot of trainers and owners love Saratoga.
Yeah.
So they're going to bring their best horses up here. But, you know, I used to, when I lived, I grew up in Gloversville, and used to come up here once in a while, you know, but I've learned more about racing from being with you guys up, and gals, I should say, at the press box. But I'm going to ask you a couple questions here because I am horse racing stupid. Why do they have so many horses in the Kentucky Derby, which to me seems to be a detriment when I know any horse can win on any given day. That was shown this year, but I don't know. It seems to me to be a, I think they should shorten the field myself, but what do you think?
Well, I mean, it's, you got 20 horses that have earned a, you know, a spot for, you know, for that race itself, especially when they've been competing for all these, you know, spring classics, as we call them. It doesn't matter if it starts out, you know, in the first of January. Actually, now it's starting, you know, before then, as two-year-olds, they'll earn points going to the Derby, and you want to make sure everybody gets an opportunity. You know, if you got a horse that's capable of doing something, well, yeah, you do want to get, at least a spot in the race. I mean, it's no different, and I kind of, you know, maybe bring a personal connection to it. I remember it may have been, actually, it was two races I'm thinking of right now. My older daughter, when she was race walking, state championships and New Balance Outdoor Nationals. I mean, basically, there were 18. I think it was 18 in the outdoor. I think there may have been as many, maybe, you know, 14 or 15 in the indoor state championships. And it's just a matter of just trying to get, you know, it really comes down to strategy, you know, trying to figure out what to do. With Meg, she was always, an athlete who always went to the lead or went to the front. I remember, and that's when she did the outdoor nationals. She went out to the lead and never looked back. But in the state championships, basically, there were, I think, three or four girls in that race that said, yeah, you're not going to get to the lead. You're going to have to really work for it. And they boxed her on the inside for about, a 1,500-meter race. They had boxed her in for probably about 1,000 meters until she was able to get out and get clear. You know, because the other, basically, maybe not 1,000 meters, about 800, you're about halfway through the race, you know, the pace started collapsing. And those, you know, three or four girls who were on the lead just couldn't sustain that pace. So eventually they started tiring, that allowed Megan to get out there. But kind of equate that to the Derby. I mean, that's what it really comes down to, is just trying to get in position, because everybody wants to, you know, be involved in that. So it's, right, you know, whether it's 20 or, you know, 15 or whatever it may be at that point, you know, that's, you know, they made the race a little bit, you know, at least the gate a little bit better to make it manageable coming out of the gate.
One of the other thing that I feel, you know, for Triple Crown races is that if you should be in the three races, even if you lose the first race. I mean, this year we never got a chance to even get to a Triple Crown winner because, you know, they didn't, like, the horse that won the Kentucky Derby didn't race in the Preakness. And I think we have to make it a little more exciting. So every year there's a shot at getting a Triple Crown, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's up to the owner, up to the trainer. It's, you know, their right to, you know, the bypass of Preakness to go for the Belmont self. Mm-hmm. I mean, they got to do what's in best interest for the horse, is whether it comes down to, no different than any other athlete, when you really start thinking about it. I mean, you can make the case right now of what's going on in golf. I mean, you have all these professional golfers that are starting looking to leave the PGA Tour to go play,
Dubai.
To play in Dubai. It really comes down to what's going to be in the best interest for everybody, you know. And at least in this case here, it'll be for the animal at this point, or the horse at this stage. I mean, as I said, it happens in every sport. I can tell you, even just watching you running, how even when we look at again, I'll use another example of a runner where, let's say, there's a runner, an outstanding sprinter, that's, you know, going to the trials and doesn't make the trials, but was good enough all the year. You know, should that person be, you know, omitted to go to the Olympics, you know, at that point? And that's, you know, that's kind of working with the argument at this stage, you know, mm-hmm. With that. But, but it's up to, it's still up to the owner, up to the trainer, whether they want to, run them in the next leg of the, in the Preakness, or to take a pass on it. I think the last person who had done that, or at least the last horse had done that, when the Derby and skipped the Preakness at Belmont, was Spendabuck. And that's like, 1985, 86, I'm trying to remember back that long. But, it was because there was a bonus, at Garden State Park, Garden State racetrack at that point.
Okay. One of the other things that is exciting at Saratoga this year is they're putting the chute back in. And
yeah, it's. I'm really excited to see how that's gonna, how that's gonna play out. I mean, I remember they tried it, years ago, and it was gonna work, but it did kind of favor, the field a little bit, especially coming from the outside, but. Now with the chute, it kind of looks like it's a little more straighter coming out, that they have at least a better approach coming out of the gate. I think before it was coming in on an angle, but I'm really anxious to see how that's going to play out.
Now, I guess they said that it was they took it out back in the 70s, but now was that someone had told me that was for turf horses that raced on that if a race was taken off the turf, so they had the distance.
It was basically off the turf races, and I think if I recall, there was like a niche made out in the middle of the turn, but it still worked with the distance. It was just the way the starting gate was positioned. It just came across a little different than what everyone would expect at that point. But now it seems like they, with the shoe, it looks, like they got the idea here now.
It's not a detriment to the race. It's kind of making it even par with a regular, maybe less longer of a race. I'm kind of anxious to see how that works, too.
Yeah, it's going to, it's going to just add another dimension to, the card itself for, instead of, it's because it's tough, because sometimes after seven furlongs, that's, at that point you got to go two turns, for dirt horses. So I think now with, with a mile, it can give a little more balance here.
Yeah. And something to look forward to. We're always trying to improve Saratoga to make it a little more interesting for fans and horses. So what else is on tap? That you know of for Saratoga?
Yeah, I mean, I've been up on the backstretch a couple times now over the last week or so, kind of just working with story ideas for Saratoga Today, and so I'm pretty much going to be having something. I'm still working with two stories right now, so I'm trying to figure out which one I want to put in for the first edition coming out Friday itself. But I'm actually going back on the backstretch a little bit here and after the show, just to get some photos of both story ideas I'm working with. But I always look for stories that are unique, because it's easy to go, do a story around Todd Pletcher or Chad Brown, pretty much, they're the household names, or maybe a Brad Cox. But the stories I'm trying to find are the more, and I'm going to say not interesting, but basically not necessarily mainstream, that, have more of a Saratoga connection to it, or some kind of a Saratoga connection to it. So, for example, I can go back to a couple of years ago. I still remember the kid's name, Evan Enora. He's an exercise rider now. in trying to work towards being a trainer as well. But he had worked for Todd Pletcher for one summer as part of an internship program, and he kind of shared his experience around this. And he was a local product as well, part of the Morrisville program, and just living around here at the same time. So those are the stories I like to work on, because these are the people who started out, just like anyone else, start out small, working for somebody else and then evolving to something, hopefully something bigger.
That's what I've always liked about your articles. Yeah. Like you said, you interview the big name trainers or owners, but you bring a every man's or everyday man's view of what goes on behind the scenes and that, which is great. I mean, and here again, that's another... That's another feather that you put in your hat, teaching, press box coordinator, but you're also writing articles for a local paper and time management, which is just means earlier hours in the daytime, I guess, right?
Yeah. I mean, as you said, somebody mentioned to me years ago about they were looking for somebody to do a feature on every week feature for Saratoga Today. So sure, I'll do it. And it got to really work well with the late Robin Mitchell, who I just found out had passed away in March. And so she had been really supportive of all these story ideas. She loved what I had done at that point. Just kept, asking me every year, hey, you interested in doing it? So, went back this year and, still kept, going to go back this year and, work with some more, stories around it.
I have to tell you, the position I was in at the Belmont, it's at the far end of the Belmont, I guess the western part where the train comes in.
Yep.
So, I'm doing my thing, mainly my job. I mean, I always get some pretty neat jobs. We're just telling people before they went through the scanner, make sure your cell phones are out for the guys. Cell phones, keys, anything metal, hold them over your head. You can walk through. And the ladies, of course, had to put their pocketbooks in the basket to go through, just like at the airport. So I saw a couple friends that I see from Saratoga. Tom Law came through, and I see this guy jump in lines from the fourth line over to the first line where I was at. And it was Tom.
Yep.
He stopped and chatted for a few minutes. And another friend who I got to know from the years that I've been up there, Jim Leyritz, came over from the second line to my line, and he says, "Hey, how you doing?" And I said, "Good, how you doing?" And I said, "You going to be a Saratoga?" He was looking to get into one of the owners, and he boxed, but he didn't want to go outside to get into the clubhouse. So I said to Tommy, my lieutenant, I said, "Hey, Tommy, can you help this fella out? He needs to get to the clubhouse." And he said, "Sure." He sent one of his guys that worked there to take him down. And I said, "That's Jim Leyritz. He used to catch for the Yankees." He goes, "Really?" He said, "I wanted a pitcher with him." I said, "You'll get one of Saratoga." I said, "He stops over all the time." But it's really interesting that the people that you meet, that you get to be recognized. You may not be good friends with them, but at Saratoga, you're a friend when you come up every year, no matter who you are. I mean, the racing atmosphere, more so at Saratoga than any other racetrack, I think, is more relaxed. And I think people are a little more friendlier because it's a relaxed atmosphere at Saratoga. Don't you find that?
Yeah, I mean, it is that. I mean, I think... again, I just go back to, last week after talking to a couple trainers, and whether it's before the meet starts or even those that stick around after the meet, especially some do still stay up here in September or October, they love the environment up here. The horses love the environment up here. It's a lot different than other racetracks. It's just the environment itself. I mean, just, you walk along the Oklahoma backside, and it's just serene. It's, it's quiet. It's peaceful. Yeah, you got the horse scalp in their training in the morning, but there's not much distractions, that there are at least noise that, would, at least at least deter or at least, you know, be distracted to the horses themselves. Right. But then you get to the, you know, to the main track itself during the day. Yeah, yes, it's, you know, there's a lot of action going on, but still you can go to the backyard and relax and enjoy a day of racing, or even just stand up front of the fence and, you know, watch the racing itself. It's, you know, it is, it's a lot different than other, you know, other sports venues. It really is. You know,
say. Well, I, the fact that I always was amazed, the fact even the jockeys, they can be temperamental athletes. I mean, let's face it. I consider them one of the best athletes in sports because they have to handle an animal that weighs probably 200 times what they do. But they're very accessible at Saratoga. Yeah. I mean, they'll stop, get their pictures taken with kids, and I don't think you find that at other tracks.
Oh, absolutely, you know? Not. I can just go back to just to watch New York Red Bulls the other day. I mean, the accessibility is limited to get to any of the players at that stage. And I think it's the same thing for any other sport, for that matter. I mean, it's not like you can go to Yankee Stadium and say, "Hey, Aaron Judge, can we get a, you know, a picture of you and an autograph?"
Right, when he's in right field.
Right, no, it just doesn't work that way. And yes, I think we're very fortunate to have a sport where we do have the accessibility to see up close, you know, whether it's a jockey, whether it's a trainer, whether it's a, you know, a horse, you know, whatever it may be. We're, you know, it's a unique sport where you've got that fan base engagement.
Yeah.
Unlike other sports, I'm not saying the other sports are bad by any means, but it's just, it's, you know, with racing, you know, there's the accessibility is there.
I think the reason why, one of the reasons why I think is, mm-hmm. We're more of a small city atmosphere, but, you know, of course, Naira's a big city track, big city tracks, but the people are a little respectful up here, too, of the athletes. I mean, if you're going to get accessibility like that, you can't be a jerk.
Right.
You've got to be controlled and that.
Well, it's that, and I think an appreciation, that's the big thing. It's just appreciation of the sport, the culture, you know, everything that goes with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, we got about 4 minutes, and do you want to finish up anything on the adventures of ski or?
There's many adventures that I would need another. You know, you said I have 4 minutes left. I need another 4 hours to share.
I know. You know, you're so busy. I can't pin you down to do a show, but maybe now that the girls aren't in competition as much anymore as they
Me in a lake tomorrow morning, maybe Round Lake or maybe Grafton on a kayak at Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, but you know, then after that I don't know where I'm going after, you know, after
that's
that.
Right, but now that, like I say, you may be able to have a free Saturday morning now that you don't have to go to Ohio to attract me or I don't know where to see Lindsay was an all-star pitcher.
She got transformed into an outfield in college.
Did she?
Yeah, she's an outfielder at that point. But okay. Softball's done. But both of them are actually running the Firecracker 4 on Monday. So I'm actually anxious to see, you know, or at least excited to see that part.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they'll be up here Monday morning.
What time?
Race starts, I believe, starts at 9.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll come down and
it'll probably be packed, but I think the finish is down by the city center, if I remember correctly. Okay. I mean, they have not run the race in probably since high school, you know, at least at that point. But it's just the first race that I think they both get to compete together.
Did either of the girls ever run in that Utica race?
The Boilermaker was on the schedule until we realized that we're in Lake Placid next week for, you know, so, or at least after.
Did they race in that before, though?
No, that's going to be one of the goals. They're actually training for a half marathon in October. Okay. So they're going to hold off on the Boilermaker until next year.
I didn't realize how popular that Boilermaker race is.
Yeah, it is.
Well known.
Definitely.
And Utica, New York. I mean, who would have thought? But, I mean, that's one famous race.
Yeah, it is.
Well, Ski, I appreciate you being here. And I know you have to go back up to the track, I think, after. But it's always nice to see you.
Same here.
And I'll get to see you every day, or I should say Wednesday through Sunday for about 8 weeks. So, and I look forward to that.
Same here.
So, You take care.
Yes, you too.
Tell the family I said hi.
Will do.
And that's it for today. We're going to turn it over to Homer Charbonneau now and his great music from the 50s right up through the 90s. So good morning, Homer. How are you?
Hi, Rick. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Hi, Tony. Great show. And you're a great person. You do a lot of great things. And I'm glad you keep an eye on Rick during the summer.
Thank you.
Oh,